The following edited podcast has been declassified by the Banzai Institute for Biomedical Engineering and Strategic Information.
Welcome all Hong Kong Cavaliers, Blue Blazer Regulars, Radar Rangers, and Rug Suckers to 5 Minutes of Banzai, the only podcast on the internet that discusses the W.D. Richter cult classic, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Brett Stillo, videographer, guitar player, and lovable rogue, and with me on this great podcasting adventure is my friend, co-host, test pilot, quantum physicist, grouse hunter, and full-time dad, Mr. Josh Horowitz.
Oh, thank you, Brett. That was a great intro. Thanks for doing that one.
I did it.
But grouse hunter, wow. That's one I haven't heard too often.
I am going on an assumption that in this five-minute segment, we have hunters.
Indeed.
Yes. I'm just assuming they were hunting grouse because it's a funny word.
Yes, it is. But we have a guest this week, a very special one.
Oh, do we? Yes, yes, we do have a special guest because he's my neighbor.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that how I get to be very special?
Yeah, well, you're special in a lot of ways, but you are also my neighbor. Listeners, in this, it sounds like we're all sitting next to each other at a big table, you know, like, you know, on my Great Aunt Nessie's sofa, but no, we're miles apart. But in this case, I'm just a few blocks from Mr. Justin Coote.
Yeah.
Podcaster, horror film aficionado extraordinaire, movie memorabilia collector, and co-host and producer of The Overlook Theater, one of the best horror movie podcasts you're going to listen to. Hi, wow. Justin.
Yeah, welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I don't mind saying it. It took us a little bit of effort to get here, and now that we're here, I'm feeling good. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm rocking and rolling. I got the kids to sleep and everything, so you know the daddy babies are all taken care of.
Excellent.
You ready to talk Buckaroo Banzai?
Yeah, when am I not ready? You know.
Absolutely.
Well, actually, first, let's talk a little about you, Justin. Tell us a little about your podcast, The Overlook Theater, which is a great podcast.
Yeah, so the Overlook Hour, it's an interesting bit, man. I tell you, because we got Clark Little as the main host there, and he's a professional comedian here in San Francisco who specializes in roasts. And then you've got Russell Fisher, who is 100% a legit Dungeons and Dragons playing metalhead, who is the purveyor of the OverlookTheater.com, which is a site that we all write for, which is great. He's actually the first horror nerd that kind of took me under his wing out here and had me begin writing again. And then he got Randy Stat, who's a musician. He plays in a band that sounds like Explosions in the Sky, but he's like this like shut in kind of like he's in his shell all the time. And he brings the art to the table. Mm-hmm. He's the art house guy. He's kind of like, yeah, your guys' horror movies suck, but mine have, you know, meaning and are beautiful. And, you know, I love that he brings that to the table. So it's odd. We can get into it. It's great. But what we like to do is, you know, spread the, you know, show some light on films that get overlooked or, you know, no one really cares about or no one talks about because there's so many of these things being made that aren't big budget. And, you know, as a community, we just try to spread the word and get some support going for those independent filmmakers and that still exist that are giving up their whole lives to put something up on the screen. So it's good times.
Hallelujah.
I just thought, you know, now I get it. Overlook. For some reason, I kept thinking that was actually related to The Shining and the Overlook Hotel.
It's like the win-win situation on that name, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Yeah. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I have to check out that podcast, and certainly we'll put up a link so that all of our listeners can check that out.
That would be awesome.
Absolutely. It's a good show. I've listened to it many times. And Movie Minute podcasters out there, friends of ours, get this. It's four guys at a table together talking at the same time. They're in the same room. Yeah, wow. Isn't that crazy? I don't know what I would do if I ever saw Josh talking.
Yeah, does that not happen? Is that a thing? I mean, I feel like, am I like living in the Stone Age, sitting at the table with the dudes?
For the record, Josh and I have done a
one or two podcasts in person.
Yeah.
But it's just the nature of the beast with the Movie Minute podcasts. Here's a great example. We've got one guy who's in Denver, and his co-host is in Hong Kong. Hi, guys.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Is that the Mogwai Minute guys?
Those are the Mogwai Minute guys. Hey, George. Hey, Neil. But, you know, you listen to the show, they sound like they're right next to each other. They could be conjoined twins, but they're not. Denver and Hong Kong. So, but yeah, this is the fact that the four of you. Now, when the four of you are doing your show, do you ever get in the fist fights?
Yeah, almost. I mean, me and Clark have gotten in it a couple times. I mean, the guy's a roast comedian, for God's sakes. And I am, well, you can't see me, but I'm a chubby, bearded, you know, dad, like kind of punk rocky dude. And, you know, he throws shots. But when we disagree on movies, which is basically all the time, he goes for some low blows from time to time. You know, it's all good, though. It's all in good fun, or at least it makes for good good podcasting.
This is true, because listening to The Overlook, it is like rock and roll Siskel and Ebert. You know, because it's, you know, you didn't like that movie and it's throwdown time. You guys And that's what I like about you guys. You are passionate about your movies.
We got reviewed one time as the like Rotten Tomatoes, but the Garbage Pail Kids of Rotten Tomatoes. It's actually visually accurate as well. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Garbage Pail Kids.
Justin and I have a mutual hangout. We all hang out at the Balboa Theater in beautiful San Francisco, California. And and I can say, having met Russell a couple of times and chatted with him a little bit, yeah, he does look like a horror movie loving Dungeons and Dragons nerd kind of guy.
Yeah.
We welcome everybody here over at the Institute.
Everybody's welcome. Yes. Everybody's welcome. But talking about overlooked films, this is an overlooked film we're going to talk about today.
Yes, it is. Yeah, what was your first time seeing Buckaroo Banzai, Justin?
I was a kid. I want to say, God, what year did this movie come out?
84.
So definitely not in 84. Probably more around like 87, maybe. Something I can remember. Because I remember it. And I remember asking my dad, like, to explain what the hell was going on more than a couple times. And he looking at me and going, well, you know, the good guy and the aliens and stuff. And in my mind, I'm going, man, I feel like he doesn't even know what's going on there. But visually, it was cool enough, you know, as a kid. And then you revisit it later with friends, but it turns into that whole, like, kind of everyone's being loud, making, like, jokes or whatever. It wasn't until much later that I could watch it by myself and go, oh, yeah, this is rad. I'm along for this ride. I want to say, honestly, probably, like, early 2000s or something. When it's one of those things, right, like, where you meet somebody and they're talking about a movie, or, you know, what's really weird, and you go, you think that's weird? You ever seen, you know, Buckaroo Banzai, man? Like, what's going down? You go over, rent it on VHS and take it home and prove everybody that you watch weird films and you love them. And it goes on from there.
It does kind of put you up on a pedestal a little bit, doesn't it?
It does. Then you're the go-to guy. Like, damn, Justin, what other weird stuff do you like that, you know, is going to take a long time for us to latch onto? And it's like, I don't know, man. What's next?
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Long live the weird.
Dude, I'm telling you, it never ends. Every time I think I've seen it all, something pops up. There's always somebody I run into at a convention that goes, oh man, check this one out. You know, it's about a killer telephone or something like that. All right, cool, I'm in.
Well, let's actually start talking about the weird here, because we're discussing minutes 35 through 40 of The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. And minutes 35 starts with Buckaroo asking Penny to hold on to his thruster, and they end with two hunters and a dog finding something in the woods at night. And this particular section, there's some really great lines that we're going to find in these 5 minutes. It also feels like almost like two movies. Once we start switching into the whole thing with the hunters and outside, it feels a bit like a TV show in a way. Maybe just the way that it's shot, or kind of the folksy humor.
Yeah,
that was the thought I had about that one.
Yeah. Josh, you've brought this up before, like with the opening credits. There's a little bit of a TV show feeling to it, a bit of a vibe. And you know, you just wonder if that's, you know, because of the budget, you know, they had limitations. And yeah, in these 5 minutes, you kind of feel like, hey, were you guys sharing the same location with the A-team this week?
Yeah,
you know, it was like, is B.A. Baracus's van gonna show up? Is that V.A. Baracus's van? I don't know, but But it's still, it's a good 5 minutes. But I feel as though, Justin, I got to apologize, because in our the first thing we're going to talk about was covered by our previous guests.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they jumped the gun. Desmond and Audra stole. Nah, I didn't steal nothing. But yeah, we'll just talk about it again, because it's about Penny and Buckaroo and the Overthruster, and how much he likes holding his thruster. So let's take it from there.
Yeah, that line actually comes straight from the novel too. I had a chance to read up on this section in the novel to try to see what was different, what was the same. But yeah, holding on to the thruster.
Yeah.
Too good. Anytime. It's like, come on.
Yeah. It's
that's
cute.
True romance right there.
Yeah, it is true romance. Because, you know who really sells it is Ellen Barkin.
Hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, she, it's about her reaction. Because, yeah, Weller has a great little smile there. Yeah, why don't you hold on to it for me? He isn't too much of a jerk there. And, yeah, she has just a great reaction. It's like, oh, did I say that? Oh. But then she, she has this look like, well, yeah, I would like to hold his thruster. That's okay. You know, yeah. She's into it. So, hey, Ellen Barkin, Peter Weller, Zowie.
What I love is looking back at his crew, like Perfect and the other dude sitting at the table, and they have this whole smirks like, oh, there goes Buckaroo again with his lines. That's like, okay, guys, they might have heard this one before. How many times has he said this to chicks?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. Also, funny enough, when I was watching the 5 minutes, I was doing a break at work, and someone said, hey, is that Cameron Diaz? What movie is this?
Cameron Diaz.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that weird? And I had never thought of it before, and I instantly looked up an image and said, I could see that. Huh. I get it.
The 80s version of Cameron Diaz. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Vampire. She's a vampire. That's what.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if they ever do a remake, that would probably be good casting. She could probably still pull that off, I'll bet.
Yeah, probably.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, now we have a weird kind of like a trinity. Because when we had Billy Vera on a couple of weeks ago, Piggy Carruthers, name dropping, shameful. And, Billy Vera knows a lot of people in Hollywood. It's great. He's got a million stories. And he mentioned, just a friend of his is Angie Dickinson.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought of this. Like, yeah, Ellen Barkin, Angie Dickinson. There's kind of a similarity. Like, that could be Penny Pretty's mother.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and Cameron Diaz could be like Penny Pretty's daughter or younger sister. So there's this whole, we've got a pretty dynasty going on.
Pretty.
And that's a whole like prequel movie of in itself, right? The Adventures of the Pennies, the Pretty Penny family or something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We're doing fan fiction here. Yeah. Top that.
Well, yes. I think I've got the right name for the daughter, Lucky. See that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on in the minutes, we after the little quick joke, we actually head over to the scene with the phone booth, and some of the things I noticed here, New Jersey's gotten rid of those woolly chaps, which is a bit of a shame. I kind of like
that's
the
a
look
bummer.
Of that. We move on to the part where he goes into the phone booth. Is it a prank call? No, not with Elephant Bravo. Not with alpha clearance. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. What the hell is Elephant Bravo? Doesn't matter, because these guys know what it is. Yeah, I mean, they're selling it, Elephant Bravo.
I mean, because the military uses that for, like, initials, right? So what's EB? Is that the thing? Is that it? Echo Bravo Tango or something?
Yeah, it should have been Echo Bravo, right? Not Elephant Bravo?
Yeah. Oh, man. We're going down the rabbit hole with that.
I guess it's heavier, right?
Yeah.
It's Elephant Bravo.
Yeah, it's Elephant Bravo.
That's the secret military lingo that even the military doesn't even know about.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys sell it like, Jeff Goldblum's reaction. Like, he doesn't know what Elephant Bravo is, but he knows it's important. He's like, Elephant Bravo. He sells it.
There's everything's played so straight. That's mm-hmm. like the best thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way Buckaroo says alpha clearance.
Yeah.
Whoa.
It's there.
We're talking alpha clearance? Yeah, he knows alpha clearance. He doesn't have to say it twice. So
I mean, doesn't he ask too, like, what president? When the president's on the phone, he's like, what president?
Yeah,
president
yeah.
Of the United States. Like, oh yeah. Okay. I'll take this call then, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Right before that, the previous 5 minutes, there's that president of what? United States? Oh, yeah. Okay. Hey Justin, You might know this, and this is way down the line. Do you know who the president is played by? Who no. You've seen many times? British actor named Ronnie Lacey. You ever heard of Ronnie Lacey?
No.
That's okay if you haven't. You would know him as Herr Tote.
Yeah, that's
from
right.
From Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're killing me.
If it was a snake, it'd bit me.
Dude, I just lost nerd points.
No. Because it's kind of an advanced one. It's you don't lose any nerd points for that one. Because I'm a fan of both of these movies. And I just assumed it's two actors both named Ronnie Lacey. Mm-hmm. No, it's the same guy. It's Tote.
I think one of the reasons I didn't quite put that together is because he's actually dubbed over.
Yeah, he's actually dubbed, yeah.
Yeah, we'll find that out later when the minutes come. But I guess from what I was hearing, he wanted to try to sound something like, who's that actor from Citizen Kane?
Orson Welles?
Yeah, I think he was trying to be like Orson Welles and didn't quite work out. And so they dubbed his voice over. But yeah, that's Tote. Crazy, huh?
That's a tough one. Yeah. You know what's funny is Vincent D'Onofrio, that's how you pronounce his last name. He played Orson Welles in the movie Ed Wood, and they dubbed him over too because he couldn't pull off the voice.
Huh.
Yeah. And you know who dubbed him?
Who?
The Brain.
Oh,
Maurice LaMarche?
Yeah, Maurice LaMarche. Yeah.
That's spot on. Damn, that's good.
Because I remember when I went to see Ed Wood and I thought, oh, wow, that is Orson Welles. And then I just cracked up because that's The Brain. You know? So we're both filmmakers. That was the worst Orson Welles ever. I've seen this movie 20, 30, 40 times. But, you know, hey, I something I never thought of before, because there's an good old-fashioned phone booth.
Yes.
Glass and metal box. Mm-hmm. How many of you younger listeners are wondering what that strange contraption is? And and there's Buckaroo in the phone booth with his very red Clark Kent-inspired glasses.
Yes.
Yeah, I never thought of it before, but yeah, like Buckaroo is, you know, Buckaroo is Superman without the tights or the cape, and there he's in a phone booth, and there's about to be a transformation, a very Shazam, kind of more of a Captain Marvel thing.
Yeah, this is his Clark Kent moment. I had a note about that too. Crazy.
Well done.
Well, here's an interesting thing. I actually have a note about phone booths, because we talk about everything on this podcast. So obviously there aren't very many phone booths left in this world. If you do see anything, you're probably going to find one of those payphones. But the first phone booth actually appeared in Germany in 1881. It was called a Fernsprechkiosk.
Oh, wow.
There it is.
That's rad. You know, I was surprised to see a lot of those things in Hawaii. You guys ever been?
Really?
Tons of phone booths.
In Hawaii?
I don't
That's
know.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, why there? And they're decorated all nice and everything. And I didn't see anyone using them, but, you know, it's still kind of cool.
That's very cool. Yeah. You know, we might edit this out, but I'm going to go ahead and go tangential that, Justin, you know that on in our neighborhood. See, Josh, again, we're sort of neighbors. Mm-hmm. And there's an auto repair place on like 40th and Irving. So it's called Hobelt. And they had a perfect condition phone booth there for years. I think the phone company just removed it like maybe a couple of years ago.
Oh no.
But yeah, it was like the full on metal phone booth. I so wanted to, put on a cape in that phone booth, but that's probably why they removed it.
Yeah. Right. Too many people getting capes in the booth.
I guess. Like people with like weird superhero fetish nerds who are like getting dressed and like, no, wrong. But yeah. I believe it's called like Hebelt auto repairs, good old fashioned like gas station garage, and I'll post a picture of it.
There you go.
Put it up on the fan page.
Hey, what would Superman even do right now? Like, where would he transform?
Oh, now where would Superman go?
Yeah,
that's a good question.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I think they made a joke about that in one of the Superman movies.
Oh,
he
really?
Approaches. You know, there is the phone booth, but he sees like one of these outdoor ones, and so he doesn't know what to do.
Yeah, the first, the Superman, you know, the Chris Reeves first Superman.
Yeah.
Yes, it's really well shot. I think that was Richard Donner, because it's tight in the foreground on the phone booth, and you see, you know, telephone. and he's racing towards it. And then the camera just subtly pulls back, and you see it was one of those very 70s, early 80s. You know, it was like a pod. It was very futuristic at the time. But yeah, there's no way he can change. And he does this, Chris Reeve does this great double take, like, he sort of looks like a Muppet, like Sam the Eagle. He sort of does this double take of, I don't know where I'm going to go.
I think what he did was the cool thing instead, where he just kind of, you know, does the shirt and then he just sort of runs, and then it all just disappears.
Right? Oh. Yeah, kind of made me a little nod to Linda Carter, because, yeah, he does it like super spaz and zoom. We've totally forgotten about Buckaroo. No.
Well, actually, moving back. Actually, I have a note about Ed, who's the guy who talks about the Elephant Bravo.
Please talk about Ed.
He's credited as a radar blazer. And he's played by actor Robert Gray. Not too much about him. He's mostly a TV career in the 80s. He had the role of Red West in the John Carpenter, Kurt Russell biopic Elvis. So there's little connection between Buckaroo Banzai and John Carpenter, i.e. Big Trouble in Little China, I guess.
Cool.
Nice.
And I'm a Red West fan. I don't want to go too far, but yeah, Red West was a childhood friend of Elvis Presley and became his bodyguard and then became a stuntman and actor. So Red West is actually, I think it was his last movie, but he's in Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze.
Oh, wow.
So that was Ed. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, moving along in the minutes, Rawhide has his line, which you like to say a lot, Brett, you know, we're busy people here.
Yeah. And it kind of shows that Rawhide can be a real because you just said, like, I didn't know that Ed had the really cool title of
he's a radar blazer.
I'm a radar blazer. So I mean, he's the guy who runs World Watch One.
One of the guys in that big bus. I think in the novel, they talk about a character called Big Norse, who kind of is the head of that. But I guess it's Ed here. We'll see him again.
Yeah. And Rawhide kind of calls him out. He's like, hey, we're busy people here. Make sure this is. And I'm like, I'm watching this thinking, this is Ed. It's like, Rawhide, cut Ed some slack. This is not, you know, some volunteer Blue Blazer regular. This is not a rug sucker. This is Ed, who runs World Watch One, I think, you know, and he's saying he had Alpha Bravo clearance.
Yeah.
Elephant
Bravo. That too. He had all of them. He had all of them. But I just, again, I think, you know, I think Rawhide runs a tight ship.
But then at that moment, we get the alien ship once again.
Yeah.
And we're going to get this zap. It looks like he's kind of like pulling a plug or something, and then you get that cool little effect from the phone and zap.
Yep.
It's cool effect that they do. I mean, if you look closely, you can actually see that the lights at the top of the phone booth kind of flicker on and off to go with all the electricity that's going through there. But is he hurt? No, he's frantically writing something, and then he shouts something that I should try at work sometime. He just shouts, "Conference room!"
Yeah.
I love that line, because right up until here, Buckaroo's been a cool cat. He's like a jazz musician.
Yeah.
You know, he's practically whispering a lot of his lines. And when he says conference room, he's almost hysterical. It's kind of not what you expect the hero of a movie to say in terms of his tone. He's like, "Wah!" and then, you know, you hear as the Lectroids are sort of listening in, you're like, "Go, go, go." He's a very excitable guy.
He's had a lot of electricity zap through him.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of electricity, I feel like we got to talk about what has become one of my favorite tropes in an 80s movie like this. And that is animated, non-digital blue lightning.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
this does count, I guess, right?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's got that, you know, animated, possibly hand-drawn glow to it. You know, Justin, when we were doing 5 Minutes of Trouble, our Big Trouble in Little China tribute, which you can still listen to, by the way. Lightning was all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of pretty, you know. So there's a lot of movies out there that have that blue lightning. It just says to me, yep, it's an 80s movie.
It's like a staple, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, if you think about totally. It. Totally. Mm. Yeah, we could probably sit here and come up with at least 10 movies that have that look. I think it all goes back to Return of the Jedi.
Right. And but, Weird Science probably had its share of it too.
Oh, yeah.
At that same time. Bingo. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. And I don't know, Ghostbusters? Any blue lightning?
I think it's more like that.
Yeah, it comes from the jetpacks. Gozerians from her arms.
Oh, right. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well done. Well done.
I do what I can.
Yeah. Nice. You know, if you felt like you lost any nerd points over Toad, you just got 10.
Yes.
We're back on the board.
Yeah, that was half court, Justin. That was half court. So, yeah, I invite our listeners, if you can think of any 80s movies, it has to be 80s. If it was made in 90, you're but any 80s movies that has animated blue lightning, mm-hmm. let us know. Let's see what kind of a list we can get.
Nice. Thermopod. What do you think about the thermopod that comes out of the alien Lectroid ship?
Well, here's a question, guys, because I listened to it a couple of times. Is the commander saying therma, like Uma Thurman, thermopod, or Thurman pod, or is it thermal pod?
I think I just naturally assumed it was thermal pod, but I don't know why.
Consulting the script.
Me too. Jed, check with the script.
It's actually thermopod, according to the script I see online.
Thermopod.
Which means hot, I guess, right? Thermo?
Yeah.
Hmm.
You want to hear my theory about it?
Okay.
Yes.
Because that, you know, that appears to be like a scout ship,
mm-hmm.
an escape pod, a little like, hey, we're going to go down to the planet thing, a VW bug. So why do they call it a thermopod? It's not doing anything really thermy. It's going down to Earth. So I wonder if when he says launch the thermopod, it's a brand.
Whoa.
In a moment, Buckaroo's going to jump on a Harley Davidson. We automatically know that's a motorcycle. It's like, hey, I need this Harley Davidson. So maybe the commander is just saying, hey, launch the thermopod. We all know we're Lectroids. We all use thermopods.
That's top of the line. That's a top of the line thermopod.
Top of the line, yeah,
little,
man.
Little trademark symbol at the top of it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a Lectroid. And when I go to an alien planet, there's only one spaceship I use, and that's a thermopod.
Nice.
9 out of 10 Lectroids use thermopods.
Well, I like the look of it. It's got that kind of hawk or owl shape to it, and that's
gonna
come into play as we move forward in the minutes.
Yeah.
But let's get back to the press conference, because we get probably some of the craziest wide-eyed expressions of our characters
in the
whole movie at this part right here. We get Peter Weller with that wide-eyed look. He sees the Lectroids without their disguise, and we get the classic line here, evil, pure, and simple from the eighth dimension. And you can't get any more comic book-like than that, Brett.
No, sir. The zoom up on him, and then the zoom up on the aliens. And again, it's like, Weller's play, this character is very cool and, you know, laid back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, hey, hey.
Very Billy Vera.
Yeah, very Billy Vera.
Mm-hmm.
But this, he's like, he has put the pedal to the metal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a comic book hero. He's a pulp magazine hero. The way he's standing, he's pointing that finger. And yeah. And also, he's laying it out. He's not being the guy in the club saying, hey, no matter where you are. He's like saying, there is evil.
Yeah, right?
There it is. And I think also that it kind of signifies we are entering Act Two.
Exactly. Yeah, now it gets bizarre. This is the part where I started getting a little confused when I was a kid watching this, because now the characters that we saw before, John Gomez and John O'Connor, now we see them as Buckaroo sees them, you know, as these evil red Lectroids.
Yeah.
Yet they're still wearing those same suits.
Right.
It took me a while to figure out that oh yeah, it was a disguise, and only Buckaroo sees it because he got zapped. It takes a little bit to get there.
I mean, it's not so well put together when Chris Lloyd jumps out and stuff. You know, it's like, okay, wait a minute, who's who? What's going on? It's not like They Live where they put on the glasses and it's like, okay, this is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we don't know what's going on. What new power has he inherited? You know, I guess we have to wait for a second. Also, I'm glad you said what the line is, because I swear to God, I rewatched those 5 minutes and I replayed that over and over again. I went, what exactly is he saying? This can't be the best take out of all of these, because evil, pure, and simple just kind of mumbles together real quick. And I'm like, wait, there's definitely, he says evil, eighth dimension, what the hell else? And being like just the kind of person I am, like, I'm not going to Google this. I am going to watch this damn scene until I know what the hell he just said. And now I know, thanks to you guys. See this?
Wow.
There's something new every day.
That's the service we provide.
Meanwhile, I salute your dedication. I would have Googled it right away and then acted like I knew it all along.
I played it again and again and again. And no joke, after the fourth time I watched it, I started thinking, this is where my brain goes. Like, there's no way they took a bunch of takes and that was the one that was the best one. You know, this line is like something to be delivered, and I don't even understand like half of it. Damn. Yeah. I played it for other people too, so I'm not alone. People said, I don't know, it sounds like evil from a dimension. Like, yeah, okay, I got that part. What else is being said?
Welcome to Movie Minute Podcasting, where it becomes like a weird Zapruder film. What did he say? Let me listen to it one more time. Because I feel you, man. I did that with Thermapod. Like I said, Thermapod, you know, and I didn't sleep last night because of Thermapod.
Dude, that and the line, okay, sorry to go backwards a little bit, but
okay.
He falls out of the phone booth and he says, don't touch him. For some reason, I kept thinking I had missed something. Like, the lightning, I get it. So, do you know that he has, like, some weird, you know, static electricity spark thing going on? Like, why would you automatically say don't touch him when Jeff Goldblum goes to help Banzai, who's, like, you know, crumpled in pain on the ground?
Yeah.
That was...
Well, did Rawhide touch him already, like, when he got out of the booth?
No, he jumps back real quick, which is not very Rawhide-like. It doesn't seem very brave. You know, he goes, oh, shit, and he jumps to the ground. And then, you know, don't touch him, Jeff Goldblum.
You know, I can imagine that being like a sequence where they kind of winged it and they kind of improvised. And, you know, I'm sure W.D. Richter explained what was going on, but they didn't have any effects to go by. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the pre-digital era. Yeah, this is the pre-digital era, so nobody's wearing a green shirt with ping pong balls or anything
like that.
There probably wasn't a special effects guy on set. Like, yeah, again, you have now who, like, okay, put on this green shirt with the ping pong balls. So, yeah, I'm playing that scene back in my mind, and I'm picturing how they had to imagine what was going on, and then some special effects guys and some sound effects guys had to kind of fill that in. And then an editor had a lot of fun trying to make sense out of it. But yeah, just from the, you know, don't touch him. Well,
yeah.
Why, you know,
what happened? Give me a pen. And then Goldblum gives him the pen, you know, it's like,
yeah.
Okay. Maybe, you know what? Maybe it's even more of an honest reaction. If you think about it in terms of like when it was filmed, like, all right, he just went through something, react to this. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
One guy says, what do you need? Help? And the other guy goes, no, don't even touch him.
Yeah. That's a really good point, because I think one interesting thing about this movie is, yeah, we're dealing with all kinds of fantastic elements, but the way the characters are dealing with it and reacting to it is there's a realism here. There's a lot of the scenes are low key. You know, we just had one of the most dramatic moments in the movie, you know, evil, pure, and simple. And then we get that great zoom and pull back. But otherwise, there's a lot of scenes where it's like medium shots and it's almost like a documentary like style to it. Mm-hmm. So, because, yeah, W.D. Richter to this day says it's a docudrama based on the actual events. Yeah. Jessen, I don't know if you know this, but yeah, Richter, he likes to say that he likes to play it out. That we were just following what the Banzai Institute told us based on the actual events and the transcripts, and you know, so he calls it a docudrama.
I love it.
Yeah, he definitely is playing it.
Playing it straight, man. I love
playing
it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, playing it straight. Thank
and
you.
And it's been consistent that way too. I mean, even if you hear interviews and stuff, sometimes he'll still talk about the Institute just like that. But we were talking about John Bigbute, or. John Bigbute, that's right. Played by Christopher Lloyd. He makes his red-haired appearance in this scene. And I just noticed that for some reason he has that nylon thing around his nose and mouth instead of an outlaw's bandana. So I'm just guessing he's an alien. He didn't quite, think it through.
Yeah, yeah. Here's my revelation from reviewing these 5 minutes that I never really got about the Lectroids. They're idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah, they managed to kidnap Hakita, but it's really because they got lucky. These three guys, who we have to assume are maybe the brain trust of Yoyodyne, don't know what they're doing. And like, yeah, I get the feeling Big Boute, like somebody handed him a stocking mask. And yeah, like, yeah, this is what you, yeah, this is how the monkey boys do it. You wear a stocking mask. And he just didn't know what he was doing. So yeah, he wears it like, yeah, cowboy bandit style. So I think this whole caper, they just got really lucky, and they had the element of surprise on their side. I think if we were to replay this sequence in some kind of a time-space loop, 9 times out of 10, Perfect Tommy and Rawhide shoot him dead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's weird how he gets the drop on those guys, you know?
Yeah, I think because it's weird. I think because Buckaroo's kind of freaking out, and maybe it's they're surprised by it, Big Booty gets the drop on. Of course, he does come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he's got Snake Plissken's gun, so that helps. But yeah, I think these three don't have a brain between them.
Well, I have a theory about it, though.
Go for it.
Because
Tell me.
I was reading from the novel just recently, and they have a whole section where they really describe the backgrounds on the Lectroids. And supposedly, back, I guess, on Planet 10, they're strong, buff warriors, but they've been stuck on this planet. They've been leaderless for a long time because Lizardo Worfen has been in captivity. And so there they were over at Yoyodyne, kind of just like waiting around, and they got soft. They got lazy, and they were eating a lot of junk food and taking a lot of naps. They haven't had to go on missions like this in a long time. And now suddenly Worfen is back. He gives them this mission. He gets his best guys, and yeah, not going according to plan, but I guess they were able to pull it off.
Yeah, that fits. Again, they seem as confused as anybody here. And like I said, I think they got lucky.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's part of the element of surprise.
Yeah. A win's a win, right? They still got him. So
yeah. Yeah. It doesn't matter.
Put a bullet in one of Banzai's crew and got the guy. And it's like, wow.
But Big Boute makes the mistake, though, of going for the professor and not checking to see if he actually had the overthruster on him.
Yeah.
Lucky for them, Penny has the sense of grabbing it quickly from its case. I noticed there you catch it really quickly, but it's not just a foam case. It actually is a charging unit. It actually says charge and hold on there, and she pulls it out.
Oh, nice.
But the big thing that happens here, bang, down goes Reno. We see one of the Hong Kong Cavaliers actually getting wounded here.
Yeah.
And then some sort of quick acrobatics by Rawhide is that tumble roll and, you know, just sort of waiting for them to leave. And New Jersey, he shows his versatility. You know, he's a doctor, and he quickly goes over to try to help Reno.
Yeah, that's a good point because, you know, up until this point, you know, what we've seen of New Jersey, he seems, you know, a little clumsy. You know, he's a comical figure. But in this moment, yeah, he's right there. He's an EMT guy. Boom.
Yeah.
Man, does this make Banzai's original line to her foreshadowing?
Oh, where he says to hold the thruster?
Yeah,
could be. Good observation.
Well, that's good. Yeah,
more points.
Yes.
Well, we move on from that point where we get our first chase of the film. We're now in the hallways. This is the part where I think it kind of starts to feel a little TV-like. Maybe it's just the short hallways that we see, and you know, like there's even a couple of, you know, like cooks that are there, and you know, you see a couple making out in the hallway. I guess it works. You see that kind of in movies of the time, but it felt a little TV to me. But it's okay. It's our first chase. Things are picking up.
I think this is where it shows that they don't have the biggest budget. You know, there could have been a little more action here. You know, one thing that shows up, I think it's actually a couple of scenes forward, but you know, you see Perfect Tommy going around a corner, and you know, he and Reno, or I'm sorry, he and Rawhide,
right,
sort of jump out at each other. And, you know, that almost looks like there, that was maybe just a one section of a longer bit that they just didn't use.
Hmm, it could be.
Yeah. I could see that. The editing is weird. I also watching it, it feels like the biggest buildup to like the smoothest Harley Davidson commercial I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, here we go, man. There's bullets flying. There's people being kidnapped. And then we're just kind of cruising through the hallways. And I don't know, which one am I going to ride? You know, this one, this one. There's no breakneck speed happening in this chase either, which also kind of blows my mind because, hey, man, that's a van. You know, you're on a Harley. It's not rocket science. You know what I'm saying? Come on, buckaroo.
Exactly. Exactly.
But yeah, that hallway chase, yeah, it's funny. The first thing I noticed too is like in rewatching it and seeing this thing is like, cool. The literally, we talk about 80s movie staples, the couple making out in the hallway. It's like, what's this guy doing in here? Uh-huh. The cooks, you know, where's the kitchen at? Like they're walking through with their stuff in their hands. It's, I don't know. It's just so funny. In these chase scenes, there's got to be these extras in there to show that life is happening behind the scenes while you're.
Right. That's a, yeah, you totally nailed that. Yeah, they could have very easily been the two main characters from a ZZ Top video.
Yeah.
It's a time warp or something like that. But yeah, again, it's very, there's something very stock and TV movie. You almost expect, you know, like maybe when that scene I mentioned where Perfect Tommy comes around a corner and he, you know, he sees Rawhide, could have easily been Thomas Magnum or Knight Rider or right. Somebody like that. Yeah. So. Yeah, but hey, it's the stuff we grew up on too, so we're not going to knock it too hard. But yeah. Also, you know, the music, you know, you got that like low synthesizer, boom, 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 boom. So it just adds to that whole feeling we're talking about.
Yep. Yeah, very much so. We do get outside. We get a chance to see the Yo-Yo Dine logo on that white van that peels away. There's some of. The many logos that are associated with this film, I'm sure there were Yo-Yo Dine patches they were selling at conventions and T-shirts. Probably be good to have a mug of one of those things, I think.
Oh, Yo-Yo Dine mug.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Want. Need.
I'm sure they all exist at this point, for sure.
Oh, yeah. You could, yeah. No doubt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, Josh, here's a question, because you're right. There are a lot of great logos. Mm-hmm. Is that J. Michael Riva who's designing all those, or did, you know, because you have so many great emblems, you know, the double B and the, you know,
yeah,
I never thought of that before, but
yeah, but probably, yeah. Or somebody on his staff. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just say, thank you, J. Michael Riva.
Thank you.
All the great coffee mugs we want now. Thanks to you. Thank you wherever you are.
Hmm. We get more comic book dialogue in the next little part here. Once Buckaroo takes the motorcycle, you know, hey, you can't ride that. Wait, it's Buckaroo Banzai.
Yes.
And I never got his autograph. He was gone.
I guess it's cool enough to say I let him steal one of my motorcycles. You know?
Stole your motorcycle? Buckaroo Banzai. Oh, Buckaroo Banzai. Well,
yeah.
It's kind of the same theme throughout the whole movie that Buckaroo Banzai is a world-known celebrity. You know, I mean, every TV station seems to cover everything he does. You know, when he gets shot, it makes, you know, world news. And he's just the guy.
And Harley Davidson should be so glad he stole one of their motorcycles.
Oh, yeah.
As I said in our last episode, this is not the Harley we know today. The Harley of 1983, 1984 was a far less reputable company. Real quick, Harley had just misfortune, mismanagement. Its name had fallen in the gutter. And in the early 80s, the company was actually purchased by Harley Davidson employees with the single mission of, we got to bring this back. We got to, you know, that was their mission, was to, you know, make a good motorcycle again, which it wasn't at the time. So, you know, motorcycle fans, we can argue about this, but there's a possibility he could have jumped on that Sportster and it wouldn't have started.
Oh, wow.
So. But fortunately it did, and he chased after that van through the streets of L.A., where we may see B.A. Baracus's van at any moment.
Maybe that's why he couldn't catch the van.
Yeah. If he had a Yamaha, it would have been over, but no. Yeah.
I'm wondering where exactly some of these scenes were filmed. I did look on Figment Fly, you know, Buckaroo Banzai Fac, and they do talk about a lot of the locations in the film. But I'm not quite sure which streets these were. And then specifically, there's a part where the van goes through a tunnel. And I thought it looked like the tunnel in the Sepulveda Pass here in Los Angeles, but it's not. So where did
it's
they film
It's the one
this?
From the Griffith Observatory. Ah. It's right next to the Griffith Observatory. Oh. And it's like, it's been used in so many good films and bad, you know, depending on your outlook. But I mean, it's the tunnel to Toontown in Roger Rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
It's where Biff and Marty McFly battle over the hoverboard, except in that shot, it's made to look like it's like 10 miles long for some reason, you know, but it's a really small tunnel. Also, it's extremely dangerous to try to take photos next to that tunnel because there's traffic going through constantly.
Oh, geez.
But I braved it. No big deal. But yeah.
Very good on that one. I was going to say we'd have to call Pete Mummert, but it looks like we got it covered.
Oh, man. No. You know what's crazy, too, is when Buckaroo you know, does that little weird loop-de-loop, almost like a dog that's about to lay down. He just kind of like
in a circle
for I don't know what reason and then drives past. That yellow electrical box, it's exactly the same in the exact same spot. And now I'm going to go back to take a photo next to that one.
Oh, nice.
Oh, sweet. Sweet.
Well, that was so he could untie his bow tie, you know, and look cool.
Oh, is that it? Yeah. All right. That's so bizarre. There's no other way the van could have gone. It's just one road. But still, he, you know, circles around looking, and then, yeah.
Well, again, that's where I think, you know, we have a limited budget and we couldn't get a really intense chase. We couldn't do something to rival Bullet. So we just get something that's, I hate to say it, a little TV movie.
Mm-hmm.
Picture, if you will, Buckaroo comes out of the tunnel. He pauses, undoes his tie, and then there's a freeze frame, and then we have a commercial for Burger King.
Right.
I think we can picture that.
You know? I could see that.
You know, Buckaroo Banzai will be back after these messages. So, you know, but oh well. But yeah, man, dude, you ID'd that tunnel.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's crazy how some things just pop in your mind. You know, it's completely useless, but so much fun at the same time. It happens to me on a regular basis.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, I think Josh, you and I both had a feeling that tunnel looked familiar, but we couldn't mm-hmm. place it.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you just totally bullseyed it. So
cool. You know, for this scene, one of the things that I noticed was that, you know, this is very much a movie from the 80s. Buckaroo Banzai is not wearing a motorcycle helmet. You know, this was at a time when, there were no laws for any of this thing. I think maybe you can do that in Texas now, but everywhere else, no, you got to wear a helmet. But it's good here just because you can see the character. But as we'll see in a later minute, when things can get squirrely and you can get into an accident, you kind of wish you had a helmet.
That's a good
point. Would Buckaroo wear the helmet, right now?
I think if he had to, he would. I think maybe here, you know, because there was no helmet around, he just needed to do it. But he seems like a safe guy, you know. He probably would.
The guy's a neurosurgeon. He's a brain surgeon.
Oh,
he would probably do a PSA. You know, when I steal a motorcycle, I also steal a helmet. Because you can't steal a brain. Dr. Frankenstein tried that.
Oh.
You see how that went. So, I think Buckaroo would be, it'd be like, you know, those Adam West 1966 Batmans where, you guys know that story, that they made a point of when they jumped in the Batmobile, they would have a very deliberate cut-in scene of them putting their seatbelts on.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Well, kids are watching, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, crazy to think, but, you know, 1966, seatbelts were sketchy. You know, like, what the hell? You're infringing on my rights, making me wear that thing. I've never had a seatbelt before. So there was this whole movement about, you know, public safety, and hey, start wearing your seatbelts. It'll save your life. And, you know, hey, Batman wears a seatbelt and Robin. So, you know, you want to be a loser, a special guest villain, and not wear your seatbelt? Put on your seatbelt. So yes, I think Buckaroo would also say, put on a helmet.
All right.
There you go.
I'm sold.
Moving on from there, we're now at the part where it really changes. We had that exciting chase, and now we're in the woods. and it looks like something out of Old Yeller. It just has this weird feel. I mean, it's like the, I don't know if the lighting, the cameras are different or something, but I mean, it just feels like a different movie at this point. Yeah, I mean, now we're getting these camouflaged hunters that, you know, suddenly see the alien ship and they raise their shotguns. Different.
Don't forget about the dog.
Nope. Oh, and the dog. Yeah, and there's a dog. You got a good point, Josh. I mean, it's well shot. Mm-hmm. In terms of the shadow, and it definitely feels like it's dusk and, you know, it's autumn, and you kind of get a little bit of a chill when you see it. But yeah, I'll say it. This is, the hunters are probably my least favorite part of this movie. Yeah, there's something that just doesn't quite click with them.
It's a little hokey. I mean, that's not to say that it doesn't kind of fit with things, but yeah, it's this part. It's a little bit different now.
You know, when I was watching it, I was wondering if it's like some weird like throwback homage to like, you know, movies like The Blob or things of that nature, where there's always some kind of outback guy in the woods who sees this thing crash or sees it fly overhead, or I don't know, because honestly, it doesn't it's like a different vibe altogether.
Actually, Justin, that's a very good point. I do think that it kind of, maybe it was done as an homage to kind of those sort of cheesy 1950s sci-fi movies.
Yeah, because if you see anything like that back then, I mean, the first person to see any of these aliens or spaceships or anything, it's always some old guy in the woods or some hunter in the woods with their dog. Mm-hmm. And it's funny too, because the whole like, hey, should we go home? Yeah, we haven't seen anything all day. Let's stick around. Maybe we'll see something. And then then they do see something, you know? Also, I was wondering, so I don't mean to jump the gun, there's all these thoughts in my head going on right now, but the line of when they start to describe what they've just seen, did they just not have any clue? Did they not tell these guys what it actually looked like? Because one of them describes it as a purple dinosaur.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably they there was nothing to look at. Maybe they were still designing it.
Like, this hasn't been done yet. you know. Yeah. But even still, like, why would purple dinosaur come into your mind?
Yeah.
It's a spaceship of some sort. Yeah.
That's a good point. It's a little bit of both. You know, that could have been an improvised line.
Yeah.
But also, like, you look at these two hunters and, you know, I think that's another reason why I'm not real fond of them is, you know, they aren't the sharpest sticks in the woods.
But the thing that I had a note about here is just the type of special effects that we see of the alien ship. I mean, this is 80s special effects, not quite Star Wars, but of that same era. You know, you kind of see that shadow underneath. That I guess is hand done on as animation, you know, and then it makes that rotation and stuff. But I mean, like it crashes, but there's no big explosion or anything. It just kind of just goes over. It's like, okay.
Boink. And you know, one thing I'll say about the ship, see what you guys think. Sort of reminds me of something you'd see on Star Trek, like a Klingon bird of prey. Or, you know, maybe this is the Klingon. Yeah. Baby bird of prey or something like that. You know, it's 84. Search for Spock had just come out with Christopher Lloyd, and that's where you first see the Klingon bird of prey. So, you know, there's a little bit of a similar vibe there. I don't know.
I think it could be.
I think maybe just coincidental, but that's all I got to say about it. You know, I'm Brett Stiller for Thermopod. When I land on an alien planet, there's only one thing I want to land in. That's a thermopod. Thermopods are made by hand on Planet 10. By dedicated black electroids who love Bob Marley. So,
do you think they're upholstered in fine Corinthian leather?
I can only hope. No, these are they're electroid ships. So there's probably this weird, you know, padding that seems to have come out of like old airliner seats. They seem to like that. So, but maybe for them, that's luxury.
We now move on inside the Yoyodyne van, and we get this gag, which you probably won't catch on the first glimpse. You kind of have to take a close look at this one, but look and see what the electroid on the far left, John O'Connor, is doing. He's actually sipping on an Eveready lantern battery, like a drink, because he's electroid and that's what they do. They drink electricity.
Well, you know, I made a reference to this in our last episode, and it frankly, it ain't pretty. Because basically, to me, him sitting in the passenger seat with a battery in the middle of the afternoon, basically it's like he's got a fifth of Jack in a paper bag. He has an electricity problem. Mm-hmm. He can't stop. You know, he has to have that battery with him so he can feel courage. And it's just sad. I think, you know, Josh, like you were saying, you know, these are warriors at one time. They were stuck on this planet for years. Here we just see their, you know, what they've fallen to.
Yes, this is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Though this is a part where there was a cut line. You can see this on the extras, where I think John Big Boute kind of chastises him for drinking that, saying, you know, oh, you know, stop drinking so much of that stuff. You're going to get like a fix.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. I like the look of Electroids, though. I mean, they're just bizarre wearing those suits and glasses and headsets with those masks on.
Yeah, they're a little like not lemmings. You know, I think you definitely think of some creatures in nature like meerkats or something like that. They just, you know, they're wonderful blank expressions, which is maybe again why I'm starting to think of Electroids more as, you know, more as idiots than actual like scary aliens.
I like mole people, kind of look like moles a little bit. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I like the synthesized effect that they have on their voices. I think that's Alan Howarth doing his stuff there, but yeah, that adds to their extra alien quality that we don't get when they're in their human form.
The great Alan Howarth, just have to throw that out. The great Alan Howarth. Yeah,
former guest of 5 Minutes of Trouble.
Oh, no big deal.
Not at all. Not at all.
And I guess they turn around in the story because they discover that the Black Electroid Thermopod emergency beacon is on. And so now that's how they know how to get there.
Out on Route 3.
Yes.
I love that little added line there. It's like, here is this amazing alien scientific phenomenon out on Route 3. Hopefully by
like
a diner.
Commercial?
Yeah. 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 There's an alien phenomenon out on Route 3. You can stop by and get some pie, too.
And with them turning around, we get what could have been a pretty epic type of collision between the van and the motorcycle. Instead, we kind of get some creative editing and sound effects to help sell the fact that they even touched each other.
Right. Right. Again, I think this is where we see some budgetary restrictions. Or I don't know, maybe that was Richter saying, no, I don't want a fancy chase. Mm-hmm. Again, it's the docudrama. He was probably just going on what actually happened to Buckaroo.
And then we're just about to wrap it up here. We get a couple of seconds back at the woods, you know, dog barking at night. We get a line here that reminded me of Big Trouble in Little China, because, Bubba says, let's wait for the cops, Bert. And, well, cops got better things to do than get killed.
Yeah, very Jack Burton.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, let's just say that this is Bert Burton.
Bert Burton.
Yeah, it's Bert Burton. Who is, would you say he's a little old. Maybe he's Jack's uncle. But I think he's a member of the Burton clan.
Nice.
And in an outtake, we can only hope he says, well, you know what old Bert Burton says when he finds an alien spaceship?
Who? Bert Burton.
Bert Burton. More fan fiction, folks.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, that ends the 5 minutes. We went from phone booths and little chases all the way to, these hunters in the woods. But Justin, thank you very much for being on the show. I hope you
had a good
time
on this
one.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
And maybe you can let our audience know where they can find the stuff that you're working on.
Well, you can check us out at theoverlooktheater.com. Especially if you live in the Bay Area, we're putting out all the events, like things happening at the Balboa was a perfect example. We've also been a part of a book called When Animals Attack, the 50 greatest animal attacking horror films of all time. So check that book out on Amazon. And then there's the Overlook Hour, which can be found on iTunes and, oh God, all the guys are going to kill me, but pretty much wherever there's podcasts up, you can find us on there. So yeah, check us out and give us some feedback, because, you know, it's all for fun.
Yeah. I second it. I, as a listener, I can say the Overlook Hour, if you like horror, But if you also got a good sense of humor, these are the guys. Because you guys, you know, yeah, you razz each other, you know, but you deep down, you all love the genre. And
it's true.
You do a great job of it. So
thanks. I appreciate that.
Again, thanks for having us on. And, you know, maybe you can have a Movie Minute podcast. Join us.
Yeah, man.
Join us, Justin.
Yeah, come and check out all the great Movies by Minutes podcasts out there. Moviesbyminutes.com has a listing. There are at least 70, if not more. Yeah, more coming almost every week, it seems. But if you want to find us, we are at 5minutesofbonsai.com. That's B-A-N-Z-A-I. And you can come check us out on Facebook at 5 Minutes of Bonsai, Twitter at 5 Minutes Bonsai. And we have a listeners group on Facebook called the 5 Minutes of Bonsai Bunkhouse. So please come and check it out. Join today. We'll be talking about stuff from this episode, I'm sure. And this is a weekly podcast every Tuesday. So please subscribe to us on iTunes so you can get new episodes. And we're also on Stitcher and Google Play. And while you're getting what you need to add over to iTunes, please rate us. Give us a good rating if you can, your highest review. It helps spread the word about the podcast, and we really appreciate it.
Well, I guess that wraps things up for another episode 8. Well, not another episode 8. There's only one episode 8, but I guess that wraps it up. Thank you, Josh.
Thank you, Brett.
It's been a pleasure as always. Justin, it was an absolute joy having you on the show. Good luck with all future projects. And yes, please, please join us in the world of 3-minute podcasting. You'd be an excellent addition. But that's about it. I guess it's time to board World Watch 1. And this is 5 Minutes of Bonsai signing off. But before we go, remember,
no matter where you go, there you are. I like that whole thing.
That was perfect. Synchronicity. There's no way we could do it better.
All right.
We're out of here. Everybody on the bus.